Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Ashley and I will bring you these stories along with Mario Ritter, Christopher Jones-Cruz, and Dan Friedel. Later, John Russell will have this week's education report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The UN has dismissed China's claims of historic title in the South China Sea. It is a major decision that comes after years of conflict among China, the Philippines, and other countries. China says ancient maps show that it legally controls nearly all of the South China Sea. But Philippine officials argue that China's territorial claims and recent aggressive activities in the South China Sea violate the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. The convention is an international treaty both China and the Philippines have signed. On Tuesday, the UN Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague said China has no historic title to the area. And the court ruled that China had violated the Philippines' rights by interfering with that country's fishing and oil exploration in the area. In Manila, Philippine Foreign Secretary Perfecto Yase called the ruling a milestone decision. U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby called the ruling an important contribution to the shared goal of a peaceful resolution to disputes in the South China Sea. But Chinese President Xi Jinping rejected the ruling. He said it would not affect China's control over the area or its interests there. An estimated $5 trillion in global trade passes each year through the South China Sea. The large area is home to rich fishing grounds and may include a wealth of oil, gas, and other natural resources. Many nearby countries claim part of the South China Sea. They include Brunei, Malaysia, and Vietnam, as well as the Philippines. Taiwan also has claims. But in recent years, China has seized and rebuilt territory in the area, despite other countries' objections. One conflict is over China's activities on natural reefs. It has built many into artificial islands that can support military bases. The UN court ruled against these activities on Tuesday. It said China did not have exclusive economic rights to a disputed set of land and reefs called the Spratly Islands. And, the court said, China's construction on Mischief Reef caused permanent harm to the reef's ecosystem. Despite Tuesday's ruling, the UN has no way to enforce the decision. It cannot use military action or economic restrictions. But the decision could make other Asia-Pacific countries bring cases against China. Those cases could increase diplomatic pressure on Beijing to reduce its presence in the South China Sea. The United States has challenged Beijing's increasing aggressiveness in the region. The U.S. military has held naval exercises in the area and deployed warships near the rebuilt reefs. The moves aim to assert the international freedom of navigation rules. I'm Mario Ritter.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders said Tuesday he is supporting Hillary Clinton in her effort to be the next president for the United States. Sanders spoke with a smiling Clinton at his side at a school in New Hampshire. The two competed earlier this year for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. It is no secret that Hillary Clinton and I disagree on a number of issues, said Sanders. That's what this campaign has been about. That's what democracy is about. But he said that on many important issues, such as income inequality, climate change, and immigration, Clinton is the best candidate for the nation. The Democratic unity announcement came just 2 weeks before the party's national convention in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Convention delegates are expected to make Clinton, the former U.S. Secretary of State, the party's candidate in the presidential elections. The Republican Party is expected to nominate businessman Donald Trump as its candidate. This campaign is not really about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders or any other candidate who sought the presidency, Sanders said. This campaign is about the needs of the American people and addressing the very serious crises that we face. Trump is expected to accept the Republican presidential nomination next week at the party's convention in Cleveland, Ohio. On Tuesday, he tweeted that Sanders sold out to crooked Hillary Clinton. Sanders was not true to himself and his supporters, Trump said. Sanders said he is pleased his campaign won almost 1,900 Democratic delegates, far more than almost anyone thought he could win. But it is not enough to win the nomination, he added. The senator took some credit for moving the Democrats to a more progressive party platform. Sanders said Clinton's opinions on some issues have moved closer to his. They include issues such as health care and reducing debt for college students. Clinton said she is proud to get Sanders' support. She said he energized and inspired a generation of young people who care deeply about our country. A recent Pew Research Center survey found that 85% of Sanders' supporters say they will vote for Clinton in November. Only 9% of his supporters plan to vote for Trump. But some Sanders supporters said it will not be easy for them to back the woman who campaigned against their candidate. Kira Willig is a lawyer and Sanders supporter from Florida. She cried as she watched Sanders standing next to Clinton. This has been a long, sustained campaign of truly believing our country could go in the right direction, Willig said. But Willig said she knows Bernie is correct about backing Clinton. Kachina Mooney, a Sanders supporter from West Virginia, said she understands he feels deeply that Donald Trump is a huge threat. Sanders' endorsement of Clinton came as the Commission on Presidential Debates announced plans for 3 presidential debates before the November 8th election. The debates will include the Democratic and Republican candidates. Independent candidates will need support of 15% of voters in major polls before the commission will let them join the debates.
U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter made a surprise stop in Afghanistan Tuesday. Carter was in the country to meet with President Ashraf Ghani and Chief Executive Abdullah Abdullah, as well as U.S. commanders. The visit comes days after an agreement with international leaders to support Afghanistan with 12,000 NATO troops. NATO allies also agreed to provide more funding for the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces through 2020. In a press conference Tuesday with President Ghani, Carter discussed Afghanistan's economic and anti-corruption reforms. He said the government's progress on those reforms is central to the continued international support for the country. Also on Tuesday, Carter said under new power, General Mick Nicholson, commander of U.S. and international forces in Afghanistan, has greater freedom to strike at the Taliban. Before the new changes, Nicholson and his forces could only intervene against the Taliban when Afghan government troops requested assistance. Meanwhile, President Barack Obama announced last week that close to 8,400 U.S. troops will remain in Afghanistan through the end of his presidency in January 2017. That is more than the Obama administration had originally planned. More than 2,000 of the remaining U.S. troops will support the U.S. counterterrorism mission. The mission will target Al-Qaeda as well as Islamic State fighters trying to take control in eastern Afghanistan.
People claiming to represent the Islamic State have claimed responsibility for several deadly attacks in the past 2 weeks. The attacks came shortly after Islamic State forces lost territory in both Iraq and Syria. They are evidence of the group's plans to remain the world's leading terror organization. The Islamic State, or IS, has been linked to terror attacks in Bangladesh, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. But it is not clear if they were ordered, supported, or only inspired by the group's leadership. Intelligence officials believe IS will use the attacks to show that its members are leading a powerful movement that cannot be stopped. A United States anti-terrorism official spoke with VOA on the condition that the official not be identified. The official said the attacks show that groups like Islamic State are still dangerous. He said they have the intent and capability to direct, support, and inspire acts of violence. The official said it is not yet clear whether IS militants carried out the latest terror attacks, but the official said the attacks show that governments around the world face significant difficulty in stopping groups of determined suicidal individuals. Other U.S. officials note that the Islamic State has lost a lot of the territory it once controlled in Iraq and in Syria. Yet these officials say IS still has the ability to carry out and support terrorist attacks throughout the world. The group can do this through the internet and social media. U.S. officials told a Senate committee this week that IS supporters are using the latest technology to spread their message and increase the group's membership. Last month, the head of the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, met with the Senate Intelligence Committee. CIA Director John Brennan warned that American efforts had not reduced the group's terrorism capability and global reach. He said the Islamic State was likely going to increase its attacks throughout the world. Malcolm Nance is a former anti-terrorism and intelligence officer. He now leads a not-for-profit research center called the Terror Asymmetrics Project. He thinks the latest attacks were directed and organized by the main IS leadership. Nance says those leaders will continue to seek out partners worldwide to help them carry out attacks. He says that will give the group the appearance of power at the same time it is losing control of territory in the Middle East. They have deep knowledge of the people and the places which would have the most impact if a terrorist attack was carried out, Nance says. It's very important for them to keep the pressure on, for people to believe that IS is a solid organization. This way of thinking could make the militant group even more dangerous. Daniel Pipes heads the Middle East Forum. He recently told VOA on Skype that the brilliance of the Islamic State has been, unlike Al-Qaeda and other groups, not to get it wrong with logistics, funding, and planning. Pipes said this level of organization makes it far easier for them to incite such violence, and makes it far more difficult for security agencies to stop it. You can't stop the flow of money. You don't have chatter. You don't have all these mechanisms, these vulnerabilities. The Site Intelligence Group studies terrorist activity. It says the Islamic State is already planning more attacks. In a video released on Tuesday, two Bangladeshi fighters in Syria praised the July 1st attack on a restaurant in the Bangladeshi capital, Dhaka. The attack killed more than 20. The two fighters said there would be more such attacks. Some intelligence experts are asking how long the Islamic State can survive if the group has separated from its main territorial holdings in Iraq and Syria. Jessica McFate is a former U.S. Army intelligence officer. She now works at the Institute for the Study of War. She says IS, at its core, is still, in my view, an Iraqi military organization that has an outsized global network. It's never going to cease to orient its entire worldview around Iraq. McFate and others say that, at least for a time, IS may be willing to inspire attacks whenever and wherever it can, rather than carry them out directly. It says the group's top leaders may hide and only keep a presence online until they feel they can safely regroup their membership. Malcolm Nance says as the group starts to lose its manpower and its central caliphate starts being destroyed, which may happen in the next year, it is going to devolve into what I call the ghost caliphate, where they go completely covert and everything is done via the Internet. He says inspiring others to carry out attacks is going to become the future. That is so dangerous because no one can predict that. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
This is What's Trending Today. Pikachu, where are you? That is on the minds of millions of people in the U.S. who downloaded the Pokemon Go smartphone app after it launched July 6th. If you remember the Pokemon card trading game from the 1990s, you are probably familiar with Pikachu and some of the other animated characters. But now the cute monsters can be collected outdoors using your phone's camera, map, and location tracker. Many people are excited about the game. People who mostly stay inside have spent more time outdoors looking for the characters. News reports say that people are meeting their neighbors for the first time. People are posting their discoveries of characters in funny locations via Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. There have been some problems related to Pokemon Go, however. One player in the U.S. state of Wyoming found a dead body while she was looking for a character along a riverbank. In the state of Missouri, thieves set a trap for other players and robbed them. The game is currently available for smartphones in the US, Australia, and New Zealand. Other countries will have access soon. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
Children and adults need to develop 6 important skills to succeed in the modern global economy. This idea comes from 2 professors in the U.S. who study how people learn. Kathy Hirsch-Pasek and Roberta Golenkov recently published a book called Becoming Brilliant: What Science Tells Us About Raising Successful Children. The authors advocate for changing the education systems of many countries around the world, including the United States. They say modern schools need to help people develop a broader set of skills than just reading and math. Those skills all begin with the letter C. They are collaboration, the ability to work with others, to have social-emotional control, and to form communities. Communication, the ability to develop strong reading, writing, listening, and language skills. Content, competencies in subject areas, but also in learning to learn. Critical thinking, the ability to gather information intelligently and to weigh evidence. Creative innovation, the ability to use information in new ways and to solve problems. Confidence, the ability to learn from failure and to persist in a problem. With these skills, children and adults can better function in the 21st century, say the authors. As a first step, Hirsch Pasek suggests that we reconsider what success in education means. She says that most education currently focuses on reading, writing, and basic math. As a result, she says, many people view educational success in a narrow way, a good score on a reading or math test. One problem with this view is that children learn to be parrots rather than human beings. In other words, people learn to memorize and repeat, but do not learn to think creatively, find information, or collaborate. Instead, Hirsch Pasek wants to define educational success in a broader way. She says education should aim to develop people who will be the creators, collaborators, and citizens of the future. Hirsch Pasek and her co-author, Roberta Golenkov, say they were inspired by education changes in Canada and a few other countries. They decided to study the science of learning. In other words, instead of thinking about how teachers teach best, they tried to think about how people learn best. Hirsch Pasek describes what they found.
And the very most important thing in learning, especially in language, but even broadly, is to have a relationship with the person that you're learning from. We are human beings, and our calling card as human beings is to be social creatures.
The idea, Hirsch Pasek says, is this. Human beings will never be able to memorize information as well as a computer. What humans do well is work together in teams or collaborate. After all, we are social creatures. Hirsch Pasek says that collaboration is the starting point for human learning. Collaboration is also a highly desired skill in both public and private sector jobs. Some good news is that people can build their collaboration skills, as well as the other skills the authors recommend, throughout their lives. Hirsch Pasek recommends that students evaluate themselves to understand what skills they have. Ask yourself, how well can I work with others? How well do I communicate? Do I think critically? How willing am I to make mistakes? If you need to strengthen a skill, the most important thing you need to do is practice, says Hirsch Pasek.
Do it. You will never get better at speech making if you don't give speeches. You will never get better at French. You will never get better at Chinese if you don't practice it. And if you don't have another person to practice it with.
So, if you want to improve your English skills, think about ways you can develop relationships with your English teacher or with English-speaking friends. Hirsch Pasek adds that students need to learn to look for experiences that will help them learn. She recommends being creative and, above all, not being afraid to mess up. Learning happens when people make mistakes. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.